studying selections from the Sevasa Rivash, from the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, and not so much teachings in terms of the theology of Chassidus, but instructions that the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, that the Baal Shem Tov gave through, that were preserved through his students, specific guidelines and teachings that together formed the basis of his entire sheet of the whole Derech HaBaal Shem Tov. And that's why this document of the Sevasa Rivash, the last testament of the Baal Shem Tov, is so important. So we were dealing with different lists, 2 weeks or so we were talking about the subject of Simcha, of joy, which is of course a major topic, a major subject in Chassidus. And I thought that in the Seder of how to do it, although last week I mentioned that we would do Hashgacha, what we're going to do now for this week and the next time is Tefillah, Davening. Davening. Davening in the Sevasa Rivash, and I'll explain. Obviously, davening is one of the most important subjects in Chassidus, and it occupies a great amount of space in all of the Svarim HaKadoshim from all the students of the Baal Shem Tov. But let's see where it began. So, on the first page, so this paragraph 58 from the Sevasa Rivash. Okay, the pasuk from Chumash, from Bereishis, there's a flaming sword that revolves to guard the path to the tree of life. The mysterious revolving flaming sword that is guarding the path that leads back to the Eitz HaChaim, to the tree of life. In other words, there's something that's preventing man from returning to Gan Eden. That's what this means. Whatever this is, it's unclear, but there is something that's preventing, you can come here, there's something that's preventing man's return to Gan Eden. That's keeping us back, that's keeping us away. And in order to get into Gan Eden, in order to return to paradise, in order to get back to Gan Eden, you have to push. You have to force yourself back into Gan Eden. So the Baal Shem Tov taught, there is a flaming sword that revolves to guard the path to the tree of life. When a person wishes to attach his thoughts to the supernal worlds, to the Creator, blessed be He. See, but the Baal Shem Tov is typical of the Baal Shem Tov and his students to interpret, as every single time that we learn here together in Shul, these Inyanim, that to interpret a pasuk that we think of having relevance only something way, way back at the beginning of time, the Baal Shem Tov taught, no, that there is something right now, this moment, that's preventing us from entering into Gan Eden. And Gan Eden, paradise is not a place, is not some sort of a dimension of existence that was only at the beginning of time. Gan Eden means even now in this world for a person to be attached to the master of the world. That's called paradise, that's called Gan Eden. But there's something that's in the way. So Baal Shem Tov says that when a person wishes to attach his thoughts to the supernal worlds, to the Creator, blessed be He, when a person is trying to find his way back to Hashem, which is the way back to the tree of life, the way back to the Garden of Eden, to the tree that's in Gan Eden. So what's blocking? The klipas, meaning the husks, the forces of evil, will not let him in. When a person is trying to return, there are many things that stand in the way. Memories of the past, the darkness that is the result of the sins that you yourself have committed, that we've committed. So there are certain tumah, there's an impurity, there are husks that are keeping us away from the tree of life. Nonetheless, the Baal Shem Tov said, in spite of the obstacle, you must force yourself with all your strength many times in one and the same prayer and attach yourself to the Creator, blessed be His name. Thus you will enter the supernal worlds. We don't have to worry right now about the meaning of supernal worlds, that the higher dimension of existence, the relationship with Hashem. But the point is that just as there was something that was standing in front, guarding the path of Adam and Chava, that they weren't able to return to the tree of life, so too even now there is something that is standing in the way between man and the tree of life, between attachment to Hashem. And these are the klipas, the kaychas of Tumah, that don't let you in.
How are we getting in if Adam was down there?
It was a revolving. It was a flaming soul that revolves. And there's a reason that it revolves. Meaning that on some level there is a way. There is a way to find one's way back into the play, into the Eitz HaChayim. There is such a thing as going back to the Eitz HaChayim. In this world, as we know it, Adam and Chava couldn't return. But like, you know, it says, Rashi brings down that the two angels that were appointed to guard the way back to the Eitz HaChayim, to the Tree of Life. So they were the two Kruvim, they were Mechablim, destructive. Mechablim is actually, now it's used to mean terrorists, right? They were destructive Malachim. But, as is explained in the Svarma Kedoshim, the usual meaning of the word Kruv, we use the word, the Kruvim were the Malachim, the images of Malachim that were standing, right, by the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. And the Gemara says that the word Kruv comes from the word Kiravya, means has a face like a child. A face like a child, right? A cherub. They say, even now, they use such a term. The face of a child. And it says in the Sfarim, what is it that's extraordinary about the face of a child? When you ask somebody, what is it that's extraordinary about the face of a child? What's different about a child's face? That these Kruvim have the faces of children. So the usual response is innocence, right? Makes a child's face very beautiful is the innocence. But the Sfarim say it's something much deeper than that. It's why the face looks so innocent. But really, what is it about a child's face? And I was just looking at this. I was just watching this before. I was playing with a baby. And you know, when you're with children, it's a very interesting thing. We do it a little bit, but children don't even try to control it. Children will take on whatever face you show to them. That's the face that the child will take on. If you play a game, even if you don't tell the child to imitate you, if you start making a certain face, the child will automatically start to make that face. Children will take on any face that you show. If you show the child a certain face, the child will take on that face. So it says in the Svarma Kedoshim that if a person is angry and bitter, if a person has given up hope, so then that angel that's guarding the way to Gan Eden looks as angry as you do and won't let you in. But if you're a person that's, you come pleading and begging to be let in, to come back and to return to Hashem, then you don't see such an angry shame anymore. Then it's amazing how the angels don't look so angry. That's why it's lata cherva mesapeches. It revolves. It turns. It depends on how badly man wants to return. Obviously, that physical place called the Eitz HaChayim, we don't know. We don't understand. But attachment to Hashem, one can still find. That's what it means. You have to force yourself. You have to force yourself. And even in the same tefillah. Even in the same tefillah. That means that in one paragraph of davening, in one paragraph of davening, to try to repeat and to try to understand, strengthen yourself in believing with perfect faith that the whole earth is full of His glory. And this is when you are in the supernal world. Thus it is written, the righteous lives by his faith. Tzadik b'menasa yechia. When you strengthen yourself to believe that the whole earth is full of His glory, melochal haaretz kevodo, then that emuna that you have, that faith that you have, that Hashem's glory fills all the worlds. In other words, even though you feel that you're far, far from holiness, if you strengthen your emuna that melochal haaretz kevodo, that Hashem's glory fills all the worlds, that means even where you are here right now, then in doing that, you will be able to become attached to Hashem. Even if you may have fallen from your level in that prayer, recite the words with lesser kavana, to the best of your ability, and then strengthen yourself to return to your level. Do so even if this may happen several times with that same level. At first say the body of the word, and then invest it with its soul. Right? Every word has a body and it has a soul. The physical word itself and its simple Hebrew, its simple translation into English or whatever language you speak, that's the physical, that's the body of the word. The thoughts that you invest into that word, that's the neshama, that's the soul of the word. Right? Its deeper meaning is the soul of the word. So the Baal Shem Tov says, don't become very upset or worried if in the beginning you have a hard time to connect to the neshama of the word. First focus on the physical word itself and its simple translation, its simple meaning. And ultimately, you'll be able to invest it with its soul. At first, you must bestir yourself with your body, with all your strength. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh taught that not only do you put your thoughts into the davening, but you have to invest your entire body with all your strength in order that the power of the soul shine forth in you. And if you look at footnote 5, yeah, just let's read footnote 5. Okay, one second. Kavana can be induced by physical activity of the body. In other words, the question is like, you know, you see a person, how much kavana do you have? You're shuckling, so does that mean you have kavana? The Moshem Tov taught, certainly not. But the Moshem Tov taught that when you get the physical body involved in the davening, since the physical body is the word itself, the physical body is the word. The word has to be shaken up. The words have to be shaken. And by the person moving his body, by the person exerting physical force into his or her body, and by raising the voice, and by davening out loud, it's ma'ayra, it awakens, it arouses, it stirs the word of the davening. So that's what he explains in the footnote. Kavana can be induced by physical activity of the body. One way is to pray initially with raised voice. Another way, on top of the next page, is bodily movement swaying to and fro during prayer. But that's not the ideal. But he says, ideally, once you reach a stage of dveikus in which the prayers are recited in the undertone and immobile in the consciousness of standing before God. The highest level of attachment to Hashem is when you can't move. That's the highest level. The movements and the screaming that and the calling out, that's to cause the physical body to become involved in tefillah, and in doing so, the words themselves become enlivened. But the ultimate level of dveikus is when a person becomes completely immobilized. Nonetheless, when a person is drowning in a river and gesticulates in the water to extricate himself from the waters that sweep him away, observers will surely not laugh at him in his motions. So too, one should not mock him when he tries to save himself from the evil waters, meaning the klipas and alien thoughts which come to prevent him from having his mind on his prayer. There's a story from the Baal Shem Tov that before the Baal Shem Tov was known, before he became known as the great tzaddik, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, as you know, was in a very hidden way trying to make some important points. So one time there was a person who was a There was a certain Baal Tshuva that was davening with all kinds of crazy motions, that was moving around a lot and was carrying on. And the people in that shul made fun of him. And the Baal Shem Tov said to the people, you know that when a person, what are you making fun? Do you make fun of a person who's drowning? When a person is drowning and the person starts to wave his arms and to scream and to call out, you make chayzik, you make fun? He's trying to save his life. He's trying to get out of the water. So too, the Baal Shem Tov said that when a person puts his kaychas into davening, doesn't mean that you have to be on that level of intention, but if you put your physical body into the davening and those motions, not again, there are halachas and there are guidelines, of course, then it's one should be careful not to make a spectacle of oneself. That's quite obvious. But to put some of your kaychas in, we're going to see there's a way to do that without moving also. But to put your kaychas into your body, so that also will have the power to awaken the neshama of the words, because we know, like the Sefer Chinuch says, That the physical actions of the body when a person acts physically in a certain way, it influences, it affects the way that he feels as well. Yes?
Ms. Silver. Even if you have fallen from your level, what does that mean?
Meaning that you're accustomed to reaching a higher level of davening.
Oh.
You're normally able to reach a higher level of davening, and it's not going.
Oh.
You can barely think of the simple meaning of the words. You just, you know, you're not.
What used to be.
Yeah, in other words, you're feeling upset because you're accustomed to reaching a higher level and a greater level of understanding, but it's not going. It's not going.
Do you think there was shuckling before the Shem Tov?
Yes, there certainly was, because it's brought down in the poskim from long before. Thus, it is said in the Zohar. Let's be fine in the Zohar. Next page, that a wooden beam that will not burn, the top of the page 48. Should be splintered and it will become a flame. We see that with coals or with a wooden beam, if it's not catching fire, you smash into a million pieces. You break it up and then it catches fire. It's the same thing with the body and the neshama. Sometimes you're trying to light yourself up to daven, but it's not going. So then what can you do? So the Baal Shem Tov taught that you have to break the body, which doesn't mean to smash yourself into a million pieces, but it means that by shuckling, by davening, by calling out, by screaming, by doing something, then the neshama that is imprisoned within you will somehow be able to be released. And afterward, you'll be able to worship with the mind alone, without any movements of the body, which is the highest level of tefillah, when a person stands absolutely still in the presence of Hashem. Sometimes, next piece, sometimes when you are attached to the supernal world, to the Creator, blessed be He, you must guard yourself against any movements, even with the body, so that your dveikus will not cease. Now, we're going to talk about this in a couple of moments. It seems to be it seems to be contradicting what he just said, but it's not. He's saying sometimes when you reach already a level of dveikus, you see the piece that we just did a second ago, that's talking about how to get yourself, to bring yourself in davening to dveikus. And that sometimes requires that physical investment. What he's talking about in this, in the 59th paragraph, is that when a person's already in a state of dveikus, the reason that one has to be completely still is because any movement can disturb that. Any slight movement, like when the Torah was given, the Chazal say that not, you know, there wasn't a bird that was chirping or a leaf that was rustling in the wind, there was nothing. Everything was still. Not to disturb that perfect state of dveikus. So, in order to get to dveikus, you have to move, you have to daven out loud, you have to cause the body to become a flame. But once the fire is going, then you have to stay still. So the dveikus will not cease. And then he continues, it is impossible to daven, to pray with kavana, without exertion. You must entreat Hashem for help and assistance. It doesn't just happen on, it doesn't happen on its own. A person has to pour his koichas into davening. Okay, now this is from the 33rd paragraph. You must learn and train yourself to daven, to pray with a low voice. Even the hymns of praise, that means even the part of davening, it's called Psukah de Zimmer, the chapters of Ashrei and the Halalukas, and to cry out silently. Whatever you say, whether it be the Psukah de Zimmer or words of Torah study, should be said with all your strength, as it is said, all my bones shall say. An outcry rooted in Dveikus is silent. This is a very deep teaching here. The Baal Shem Tov is saying, is that you have to learn, ultimately you have to learn how to daven with a low voice, quietly. It's brought down, the Reb Chaim Vital brings down that the Ari HaKadosh, with the exception of Shabbos, the Ari Zal used to daven very quietly. You could barely hear him. Only on Shabbos, because of the covet of Shabbos, so the Baal Shem Tov, the Reb Chaim Vital says the Baal Shem Tov used to raise his voice a little bit. But from here, when we look at this piece of the Baal Shem Tov, it's pretty clear that if a person has not yet reached the level of dveikus, he davka should daven out loud. He davka should daven. If you've ever been by the Stalin of Chassidim, right? The Stalin of Chassidim, if you've been, the screaming, the yelling is there. It's unbelievable that you know, they say by Reb Shlomo Kalina that when he was finished davening, he used to come out blood from the effort. He used to come out blood from his throat, from his mouth. The koiches that are put into davening, because the Baal Shem Tov Kodesh is talking about getting to a point of dveikus. Getting to a point of dveikus. Then it has to be, the Ari HaKadosh was in a state of dveikus. The Arizal was on that highest level. Therefore, the Arizal's davening was in silence. But to get to that level of dveikus, to come to such a madrega, a person davka has to daven out loud. If you look in the, there's a whole machlokus about how the Baal HaTanya used to daven. It's interesting because the machlokus was between his son and between his greatest student. And they were both there for many years. So it's extremely odd. There's the school that describes that the tefillah of the Baal HaTanya is that he didn't move, he stood like mamash, like a statue. And Rav Arala, his student, the way that he describes the tefillah of the Baal HaTanya was with the Kolatz Maisei Tamarna, that the whole building would be shaking. And we have stories of the Baal HaTanya and the way that he used to daven in such a way with tremendous kailos, subrokim, and movements and so on. And there are other stories about how the Baal HaTanya, they don't, where the Baal HaTanya used to daven was a stone wall, where he used to daven by Mizruch in front of the Bais Medrash. And over the years, people began to notice the Baal HaTanya would have his hands against the wall, Shemoneh Esrei. And he stood completely still. But after the years, they noticed that there were deep indentations were forming inside the wall from the concentration of his hands, that he was standing, holding his hands against the wall, Bais Medrash. Remember, there's a famous story about the Baal HaTanya by davening, you know, he walked out into the woods, I told you a few weeks ago, and he smashed a standard. So what are these two traditions? Apparently, Eilu Velo Devlo Kim Chaim. There were times that the Baal HaTanya davened in such a way, there were times the Baal HaTanya davened in complete stillness, in complete silence, in that way of stillness. But the Baal HaTanya in the Igeres HaKadosh, in the 22nd chapter of the Igeres HaKadosh, the Baal HaTanya writes there, L'schazek b'chol ois. The Baal HaTanya writes that one must strengthen himself in all manners of strengthening oneself. L'spalu b'chol ram, to daven out loud. Not Shemoneh Esrei, of course, God forbid. It's not so much Shemoneh Esrei. Let's talk about the rest, other parts of davening. Psukah de Zimmer, Brichas Kriyashma, and so on. Not Shemoneh Esrei. But the rest of davening, the davening should be the tiny rice that should be the kol ram. Because the kol, the sound is mo'iras ha-kavon, it awakens, it arouses the kavon. This is found in the Rishonim as well. The Ramban discusses this and others. The importance of being mechazik oneself, to daven out loud. But not only davening, he says also the study of Torah, learning Torah. That's already a din in Yerodeya. That's a din in Yerodeya, in Simon Reish Mem Vav. As the Shulchan Aruch says there in Sivchav Beis, that when a person is learning Torah, it says that you should learn Torah out loud. And the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch brings down, that only when you learn out loud, it's Mizkai in B'yodo. Then you remember your learning. But if you just look at it, if you just look at it, or you just say it very quietly, so then you're not going to be able to hold on to that learning. But when you say the learning out loud, then you're engaging all of your body in that learning. When it's just an intellectual thing, you see the problem like this. We're not malachim. We're physical beings. If we'd be angels, then we'd be purely pure intellect, it would be one thing. But since we're physical, so you want to be able to remember this piece of Torah, you want to remember Rashi, you want to remember the Gemara, you want to remember the Pasuk the next day. You're a physical human being that's a combination of emotions, intellect, the neshama, and the goof, and so on. Therefore, in order for you to really grasp something that's spiritual, you have to bring it into your physical existence. And the way you draw it into your physical existence is by getting your throat sore. And by getting your body and perspiring over it. Then your body becomes completely engaged in that spiritual activity. And in doing so, the spiritual act becomes combined with the physical body, and therefore it remains as part of your life, even in this physical world. But if it's just pure intellectual, like a thought, and we know this even lahavdul when it comes to studying, you know, you could read a book 20 times, right? And you read it this, and then you have, you know, there were friends of mine even when we were in school that, you know, they used the highlighters. So you had like one line that wasn't colored on the page. So you always, you know, you want you just color the line that you don't have to do, right? Just that the whole thing is colored. And then after that, you know, then you, after you finish coloring the whole book, right? You sit there with a highlighter going, and you see the person going in two directions like this, right? After you finish highlighting the entire thing, so then you say, okay. And you're trying to think, I don't know one thing from anything that I just read. I don't know one thing. So then you're a little bit of a bal seichel. The next thing is maybe you'll summarize in writing. Because now you're already bringing it more in lamaisa. You're bringing it more into the olam ha'asiyah. You're starting to write a tamsis, a summary of the book, right? So then you say, okay, now I wrote it. So I'm ready for the exam. You're not ready. So then you read it a few times. You read it, you make a couple of calls, right? You read it again. It's great, and it's just not going. Then there's that one time that you pace back and forth in your room and you say it out loud, and that's when you coin it. That's the kinyan, that's the acquisition. That's when you acquire that piece of Torah. Torah and Lahavdil, even if it's not Torah, that's how a person brings something into the Olam HaSiyah, into the physical world. So when he says here, that it should be said with all your strength, when he says it should be said on the highest level with all your strength, does not mean screaming and yelling. The highest level is an outcry rooted in Dveikus. That's already in silence. That's already something that's already silent. Because as he said in the piece before, in the previous page, that once there's a state of Dveikus, then one has to be careful to be still. One has to be careful at that point, one has to be careful to be still. His great-grandson, Rabbi Nachman, spoke about this very often. You know, that davening is the most important thing that Rabbi Nachman concentrated on. So Rabbi Nachman says over here, and there's a paragraph in the Sichas Aran. Listen carefully. You don't have this in front of you. There's a paragraph in the Sichas Aran. Da, Rabbi Nachman says, you should know, She'achaylan litz'ay b'kol d'mamadaka, that it is possible to scream in silence. B'tzalka g'doyl ma'od, in a very loud way, v'lo yishma shum adam klal, and no person in the world has to hear that scream. K'enem moitzi shum kol klal, because there's no voice that comes out of your mouth, no sound is heard. It's you're screaming in a silent way. Every person can do this. What does that mean? He says, the meaning of this is, in your mind, picture yourself screaming. Try this by davening. It's unbelievably powerful. You know, you don't want to make a spectacle of yourself. You're in shul, and if you're trying to daven, of course, that might draw attention to you. So you don't want to draw any attention to yourself. So you're standing there in shul, and you want to give a shrai, you want to give a scream. You want to give a scream. So Ibn Achman says that when you're amongst people and you might, it's hard for you to give that scream, or maybe you're embarrassed or whatever it might be, or it's not the right place, or not the right time. So he says that in your mind, you could be standing there screaming and yelling out those words. That scream will enter into your mind. With a niggin. You could picture yourself in your own mind screaming out that thing, that tefillah, with a niggin. And you could enter more and more into this thought, until you are screaming in a still, quiet voice. The shum adam lo yishma klal, and nobody in the world will hear that. No one in the world will hear that. He goes on to even to describe how. I don't understand this, but in the next piece in the Sichas Aran, and that's Tazayin, in Tazayin Sichas Aran, he goes on to describe how it's possible that if when you have this thought in your mind of screaming, that a slight, very, very subtle sound will even come out, even though your lips are sealed, that some sound might come out. I don't know what that means. I don't know. But he says there is such a thing. He says, sometimes a tiny little sound can be heard from a person's brain. When you're screaming out loud in your brain, sometimes a tiny little sound can be perceived coming out from the, whatever that means. But this is a madrega of davening where a person is screaming in silence. If you look at footnote 1 on the top there of the page, to pray out loud stimulates kavanah. This is customary in many places, and especially among certain schools of chassidim, to pray loudly with great intensity, except for the Shemoneh Esrei, which should not be audible even to those standing next to you. On an elevated level of communion with Hashem, however, when praying with profound focus and devotion in the gripping consciousness of being literally in the very presence of God, the words flow from the very depth of the heart and soul and are practically silent. Chana was speaking from the heart, only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. Because of the depth of her tefillah, Chana was in a state of dveikus. When she was davening for a child in the Mishkan, she was in a state of complete dveikus, and therefore, although her lips were moving, her voice was not heard. And the Gemara in Brachas learns out from here that this is the way that we daven Shemoneh Esrei, where a voice can't be heard. And obviously, in davening, the most powerful, the strongest moment of davening, of attachment to Hashem, is Shemoneh Esrei. And the Shemoneh Esrei is Davka silent. To pray aloud initially is acceptable and even necessary for the average person. Nonetheless, you must learn and train yourself to pray with a low voice and to cry out silently. Like it says by Moshe Rabbeinu, remember when he was in the water? Coming up to it next week. Not this Shabbos, the following Shabbos, Parsha Shmos, right? So the daughter of Paro was there. And what does it say? She saw that there was a baby crying, and she knew that it was Miyal Behevrim, it was a Jewish baby. So the Rebbe Moshe Lipsasov, I don't remember, it was the Rebbe Abzushi, might have asked, why does it say that she saw the baby crying? It's interesting, no? The first thing would be to hear the baby crying from a distance. But it says that she saw the baby crying, and she knew that it was a Jewish baby. So the Rebbe Abzushi might have said that a Jew knows how to cry without making a sound. A Jew knows how to cry without making a sound. Therefore, when she was approaching and there was no sound, but the baby was crying silently, she knew it's a Yiddish akin. It's a Jew. Because Jews know how to scream in silence. They know how to cry without making a sound. So she knew that it was a Jewish baby. That's why I said she saw that there was a baby crying. She didn't hear a thing. And it's the same thing with us, with adults, that there's a way that a person can scream and can yell and can cry, and nobody has to know. Doesn't have to become public knowledge, doesn't have to be a show, but only you and the Baruch Shalom are able to know that scream is taking place. On the bottom of the page, paragraph 34, he says, know that every word is a koma shlema, complete structure. This is a very deep thing. This is actually something that's found in the letter that the Baal Shem Tov wrote to his brother-in-law, to Reb Gershon Kitov, that we once read together. But every single word, the Baal Shem Tov taught that every single word of davening, every single word of tefillah and of Torah, it's a complete structure, meaning it's a complete world unto its own. And that's what, if you look in footnote 1, every letter contains worlds, souls, and divinity. These ascend and become bound up and united with one another with divinity. The letters then unite and become bound together to form a word, becoming truly unified in divinity. All worlds will then be unified as one and ascend. This is one of the kavanas that the Baal Shem Tov wrote in his letter to his brother-in-law, and he said that when the Baal Shem Tov said that when he ascended to Shemayim, he met the soul of Mashiach, and Mashiach asked, "Ei mosai ka'asi mar," when, and the Baal Shem Tov asked Mashiach, rather, "When are you coming to the world?" So Mashiach said that when everybody will be able to practice this kavana, this thought of connecting together worlds, souls, and divinity, which is a very deep subject. In Bechlal, each letter of the Aleph Beis contains in it these three, is able to be understood on these three levels of worlds, of souls, and of divinity. But that's something that if you want to get a better idea of, an explanation of that, there's an absolutely magnificent sefer, a book that's in English actually, that was written by Yitzchak Ginsberg called the Aleph Beis. We have here in the shul that the entire book, which is a good 350, 400 pages, it goes through all the letters of the Aleph Beis. The entire book is based on this teaching of the Baal Shem Tov and showing how every single letter of the Hebrew Aleph Beis contains worlds, souls, and divinity. And how to understand each letter of the Aleph Beis on those three levels. And that's something which is definitely kedai to get. It's out of print? Yeah? It's already been printed? Huh? The book on the Aleph Beis is a classic. So he says, thus you must invest it with all your strength, otherwise it will be defective like missing a limb. In other words, since every word is like an entire body, it's a kaima shleima, every word is a kaima shleima, if you don't put all your koichas into the word, so then that word is like it's missing an arm, it's missing a leg, it's missing an eye, an ear, whatever, it's missing a piece, something's wrong. 35, it is a great kindness of God that man remains alive after praying. Can you imagine? Now, when we hear something like everything, because we couldn't take the chazan, we're schlepping it out. You know, like, hey, kin, I'm not going to make it, right? That's not what the Baal Shem Tov meant. It's a great kindness of Hashem that man remains alive after davening. You know, they say from Rabbi Uri Streliska, who's davening, he was called the burning fire, the Sarif, the Streliska. But they say about the Baal Shem HaKadosh also, that before the Streliska, and before the Baal Shem used to leave, to go to shul, they used to bid farewell to the wives and to their children, to the family, because they weren't able to see how they could possibly survive davening. They put the kreiches in the davening, they used to say goodbye. They weren't sure if they would ever see their family again. They didn't know how they would be able to survive all of that was put into davening. It's brought down in the Sfarim. I mean, that's the meaning of the way that the Baal Shem Tov interprets the pasuk when it says in Shmuel Aleph, "Ve'eshpoich es nafshi lifnei Hashem," I poured my soul out to Hashem. So we normally think that means, you know, I put a lot of emotion into it, but the Baal Shem Tov was literal. I poured my soul out, and it was questionable whether or not I'd be able to come back to this world, whether I'd survive the ordeal of davening.
Whether
he was going to become completely separated from the physical world. In other words, he considered it a nace. He considered it a miracle to be able to survive davening. In the natural course of events, death would have to result from exhausting all strength in prayer, because of exerting oneself so much by concentrating on all the great kavanas, the mystical devotions. That's ve'eshpoich es nafshi lifnei Hashem. And that's how the Baal Shem Tov understands the death of Nadav and Avihu. Remember Nadav and Avihu? So it says in the pasuk, "Bekarvasum ufnei Hashem v'yamusu," that because of their closeness to God, they died. Because of their closeness. Of course, the literal meaning in pasuk is that they went and they brought onto the mizbeach. But "Bekarvasum ufnei Hashem b'kroy v'yakadesh," that the Svar Makadoshim understand that Nadav and Avihu reached such a level of dveikus in their davening, in their avaida, that they simply died. Then the neshamas left the body. So what is the taiva over here? What is the act of kindness? So the act of kindness is because we have to remember that the tachlis of our serving God, the purpose of our serving God is davke the neshama with the guf, is to be in this world. The point is to remain in this world. And the Baal Shem Tov therefore considered to be a great act of Hashem's kindness that he kept shehechzar to be nishmasi, that you're keeping my neshama together with my body. Because when the Baal Shem Tov davened, he felt that his neshama was leaving. And therefore, the tachlis of this world is to remain. The tachlis of serving Hashem is that the neshama should remain attached to the guf, to the body, not that it should be separated. Therefore, it was a great act of kindness. Because that's the tachlis ha-kavana. Not that there should be a separation between those two. He says in 36, sometimes you can pray very quickly. Because the love of God burns very strongly in your heart. And the words flow from your mouth by themselves. Again, this is not a madrega that you and I can understand at all. Halavai, we should be able to concentrate a little bit on the Ivri and what it means, and what we're saying. But I want you to have an idea of what the Baal Shem Tov saw as the ideal davening. So there is such a thing that a person can daven very quickly. The Kotzke, they say, is to daven very quickly. The Kotzke is to daven very fast. And sometimes he said you can daven quickly. Why? Because the love of Hashem is burning so strongly that the words flow from your mouth by themselves. The words come flying out. You can't control the words. They're coming so in such a powerful way that you can't control the speed of the words. In other words, as he explains in the note, that person feels that he's not speaking himself anymore. He feels that the words are just coming by themselves. Okay, let's turn the page. It says on page 29, that's paragraph 40. When you are on a low level, now he's talking to us. When you are on a low level, it is preferable to pray out of the Siddur, prayer book. Baal Shem Tov said this very often. He used to beg his followers to daven in the Siddur, to look at the words in the Siddur. By virtue of seeing the letters, you will pray with greater kavana. Looking at the letters, seeing the letters, since each letter of the Aleph Beis, every letter of the Aleph Beis has tremendous energy, and the shape of the letter, the form of the letter, has itself tremendous energy. Especially, you know, it's a very powerful thing that makes some siddurim you can get that have the letters that are written in the Siddur in the same way that they're written in the Sefer Torah, in Ksav Ashuris, which the Ben Ishchai especially emphasized that it has a powerful effect upon one's davening. They have siddurim like that, where you have the Siddur, not in regular typeset, but in the print that's found in the Sefer Torah, that type of Ksav Ashuris, that when you look at the letters themselves will help you daven with greater kavana. When attached to the supernal world, however, it is better to close your eyes. That means by Shemoneh Esrei. The Ari HaKadosh used to daven Shemoneh Esrei without looking in the Siddur. The entire davening, he davened with his eyes in the Siddur, but by Shemoneh Esrei, the Ari HaKadosh used to close his eyes. So too, Shemoneh Esrei, he says, however, it is better to close your eyes. But that means already, if you're holding by a level of attachment of Dveikus, you're already on a higher level. That means it's better for people like us to follow carefully inside the Siddur. However, it is better to close your eyes, that the sight of your eyes will not distract you from being attached to the supernal world. Which is the meaning of covering your eyes by Shema. When we cover the eyes by Shema, to be able to focus on that, on the thoughts, and not to be distracted by anything else outside. But as far as Shemoneh Esrei is concerned, again, it depends on where you're holding. For some people, it's much, much better to daven Shemoneh Esrei every word inside. For other people, it's better to daven with the eyes closed, as it's found in the Kisvei. The way that it's found in the Kisvei Ari. The Mekubalim taught, the students of the Arizal said, that when you daven inside the Siddur and you follow every word, it's the same as davening with your eyes closed. In other words, you prevent yourself from being distracted. If you look inside the Siddur, you don't take your head out of the Siddur, it's as powerful as davening with your eyes closed. So it's up to the person, how the person feels, and what you're comfortable with, and where you're holding. I mentioned to you a couple of months ago that there was a taina against the Kedushas Levi, that the Baal Tanya went and he said to Kedushas Levi that the Misnagdim are upset because the Bedishva, when he was davening Shemoneh Esrei, they saw him davening with his eyes open and he wasn't looking in the Siddur. And it says in the Kisvei Ari, you're supposed to daven your eyes closed when you say Shemoneh Esrei, or you put your eyes in the Siddur. But the Bedishva used to daven with his eyes open, so the Kedushas Levi said, I do. Right? That was his response. I didn't know. I didn't realize. So, and I'll be more careful. I didn't know. We can tell when our eyes are open. Right, we know when the eyes are open, and therefore either a person during Shemoneh Esrei concentrates on the words inside very carefully, looking at each and every word, or to close the eyes during Shemoneh Esrei to try to concentrate. Yeah, that's why he explains in footnote 1. The mystics emphasize that the letters of the Hebrew Aleph Beis are not conventional symbols for sounds, but signify and are charged with divine emanations, lights, and creative forces. We were talking about that last Shavuos. The very sight of these holy letters, therefore, stimulates kavana. Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the Arizal, always prayed out of his siddur, except for Shemoneh Esrei, which he said with his closed eyes. the next piece, the soul of the Rebbe, of the Baal Shem Tov, the soul told the Rebbe. This is a very unusual lashon, very unusual sentence that that much has been written about, that the neshama of the Baal Shem Tov told the Baal Shem Tov that he did not merit his revelations of supernal matters because he learned so much Talmud, so much Gemara, and codifies, and the Shulchan Aruch, but because his prayers were always with great kavana. By virtue thereof, he merited to attain a high level. Even though the Baal Shem Tov was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and some of his students were amongst the greatest geniuses of learning of the generation, the Baal Shem Tov taught them revealed Torah, not only concealed Torah, yet the Baal Shem Tov's neshama told him that the reason he was able to reach his great level of Ruach HaKodesh was not because of all the Gemara that he learned and all the Shulchan Aruch and all the Poskim and so on, but because of the Koiches, the energy that he put into his davening. That that because he always davened with great Kavanah, by virtue of that Kavanah, he was able to merit a to reach a high level. The next page. Paragraph 118. On page 108. When meditating in prayer on all the kavanas, meaning the mystical devotions known to you, you are but meditating on those you know. You know, there are many, many siddurim that contain within them the mystical configurations, letters of Hashem's name, and all different kavanas that a person can have when saying the names of Hashem and saying the different parts of tefillah. But the Baal Shem Tov said that whenever you have a specific kavana, a specific meditation, that means that all you're meditating on is on that specific point that you know. On the other hand, when you say the word with great hiskashvus bonding, if you say the word in a simple way, and you know what the word means, then when you say that with great hiskashvus, with great emotion, and with great energy, all the kavanas are included in the whole word of themselves and by themselves. In other words, when you have a specific kavanah in mind, when you have a specific kavanah, that's the kavanah that you have, and that's all that there is. Finished. That's your kavanah. But if you're mekashi yourself to the letter, that's why Reb Chaim Volozhiner said in the Nefesh HaChaim that the highest level of davening is that a person should see each one of the letters and to focus in his mind's eye on each of the oisiyos when you're saying the letter. It would take a long time to daven like that. It means to see every letter separately when you're davening, to see nothing else in the world, to see just black and that letter like on fire. So when you focus on the letters and you say the letters with hiskashuas, with bonding, then you're not only focusing on one kavanah. Then all of the possible kavanahs of all the men of the Great Assembly and the Arizal and the Rashash, all the greatest kavanahs, it's considered as if you had all of those thoughts, all of those kavanahs. For every letter is a complete world, as we saw. Thus, when you say the word with great hiskashuas, with great attachment and bonding, surely you bestir those supernal worlds and thereby achieve great effects. You're able to cause this great cosmic effect in the universe, in the world, when you're makashi yourself to the oisius, to say the letters, and to, the simple letters, and to focus, to try to imagine in your mind the letters that you're saying as you're saying them. And surely then you bring great effects on the supernal, because every letter causes a stirring above. The next page. Paragraph 72. Sometimes when you feel that you are unable to daven, to pray, do not believe that you are definitely unable to pray that day. Strengthen yourself all the more, and the awe of Hashem will come upon you even more. This is comparable. Here's a famous marshal from the Baal Shem Tov. It's brought down by Ms. Richard Magid. This is comparable to a king who sets out to wage war and disguises himself. So the king goes out to war, but he disguises himself. I mean, it would be a sitting duck to walk out in the middle of the battlefield with his robes and his crown and everything, and size his heart to run around also. But he'd be a sitting duck. Those who are wise recognize him by his mannerisms. So he's wearing a regular soldier's uniform. The king's wearing a regular uniform. But the people who are wise, they're able to recognize the king by his mannerisms, by the way that he conducts himself. Those who are less wise recognize the king by noting the place with extraordinary guarding. Surely That is the place of the king. How else can the wise person, how else does the wise person notice that that's the king? How would he know? He'll know where there are a lot of people standing around, where there are a lot of guards. There are a lot of guards that are surrounding the king. So what does the Baal Shem Tov say? He says, thus it is when you are unable to pray with kavanah. So you think, I have no kavanah. I can't daven at all. He said, you must know that there is additional guarding all around the king. In other words, that whenever you want to come close to the king, there are guards around the king. The king is there, but you are unable to approach him because of the special protection surrounding him. Thus, fortify yourself with awe, great strength and additional kavanah, so that you will be able to come close and pray before God. You will then be able to pray with exceeding kavanah. In other words, whenever a person wants to get closer to Hashem, let me give you, it's an easier way to understand this. A person, stop, when you're not trying to think of anything, your mind could remain pretty free of certain negative or alien thoughts. But you know that when it comes time to daven Shemoneh Esrei, all of a sudden, boom, daven Shemoneh Esrei, to say Kriya Shema, then you start to have crazy thoughts. Because that's a siman that the king is nearby. Then you know that you're near the king. When you're further away from the king, then there's nothing guarding the king. There's nothing surrounding the king. But when you're approaching the king, then he's surrounded. Those thoughts that are pulling you away, those thoughts that surround the king, make it seem to you as if I'll never get to the king. That's because in order for you to truly get to the king, you have to exert yourself. You have to push past the guards. You have to go past those guards. That's why it's the nature of a person that when you're trying, it's the same thing when you're avodas Hashem. Davka, when you're getting close to Hashem, you're always going to find more obstacles. If you're not putting much effort into being a Jew, then you pretty much be left alone. They're not going to make a big deal. You're not causing much of a commotion. And they'll leave you alone. But if you're getting all the way into, if you're getting near the king, if you start to become a stronger Jew and you want to become stronger, all of a sudden, every possible obstacle is going to get in your way. Everything that could possibly happen, everything that could go wrong is going to go wrong. You know? Someone called me last week that there was a person that for years I'm talking to this person about kashering the house. And finally, Baruch Hashem, they kashered the home, and it was a whole wonderful thing, and it was a big simcha. So they finally kashered the home. So she called me up. It was the day after she kashered the home. And what happened was is that, you know how sometimes you get a Lebedika kitchen, you know, things start to move around. So it was the day after, she kashered. So what happened is that there was a pot, and she dropped something in it, and it spritzed all over the place, and you know, she was crying that she traked everything up, and that until finally she got kosher pots, and she kashered her stove and her oven, and the kid, everything was kosher. And now, like the first day, she's all excited, she's gonna make her kosher food, and then, you know, milk is inflation, you know. Not together. Milk is inflation. So her attitude was that God doesn't want me, you see that? I was telling you all these years, God doesn't want me to keep kosher. If God wanted me to keep kosher, he wouldn't have made the milkers and fleishigs, wouldn't have made such a shidduch today, but the milkers and fleishigs. If he made a shidduch, it means he doesn't want me to keep kosher. It's just opposite. As long as you didn't care, there was no milkers and fleishigs flying around. But the moment that you care, then stuff's going on. Because whenever you approach the king, you have to be on the level. You have to be sincere. To get into the king, you have to mean it. And therefore, to test your sincerity, there are guards that are standing by the king. Now, the person who knows this, who is wise, the Baal Shem Tov said, he'll realize that when I start to daven Shemoneh Esrei, I start to have crazy thoughts. That's not because I don't care. That's not because I'm a low life. That's not because davening means nothing to me. It's because I want to approach the king. The davka over there, that it becomes, he becomes surrounded by guards. And for you to really come sincerely into the king, you have to be able to exert yourself to go past the guards, to be able to get past them. That's what he says. That's all the things that we're talking about. And the karkas and screaming and whatever it is, screaming inside your head and yelling. And one thing the Baal Shem Tov taught is that if you're having a thought that's not holy, that's not pure, the worst thing you could do is to try to get rid of it. It's the worst thing you could do. Yeah, because then you get buried in it deeper. The Baal Shem Tov and his students taught Makshava Ra, Makshava Acheres, which is the mystery of Mamre, which is Makshava Ra, if you have a bad thought, Makshava Acheres. The point is not to try, I gotta get rid of this thought. Then you start to consider every single angle of that thought that you have to get rid of. The Baal Shem Tov Kaddish said, you have to think of something else. That the mind cannot think of two things simultaneously. And therefore, by throwing your carcass into this, into looking at the words, and davening and screaming, and Shemanesrei screaming quietly inside your head, and by looking at the, and focusing on the Isis, and thinking of something that's Bekedusha, for instance, that's brought that away from Yisrael, to try to imagine yourself standing in Yerushalayim by the Kaisel, right? Now, most of us have had this chus of being by the Kaisel. So then you've been to the Kaisel, is that there's a certain stone that you like, right? And you could smell it also. You could smell the stone. You could smell the Kaisel, and it has a certain touch. And you feel that, you could feel in your davening in Shemanesrei. Go there. Go to the Kaisel. Or you think you need the internet to go there? You go there yourself. The mind of a Jew is much stronger than any internet. And you can go to that place, by the Kaisel, and smell and feel yourself standing by the stone, and feel yourself pressing against it. Another thought, not to try to get rid of the thought. Try to get rid of the thought is like quicksand, you know? You start kicking, and you get deeper and deeper. No, a machshava acheres, a different thought, something else, a different thought. And Rabbi Nachman used to say, even if it's Narishkeit, counting sheep, whatever you want to do, it could be Narishkeit. But not to just try to get rid of the thought, but think of something else. Think of something else. But that's a halachah, how to have the strength and the kavan and how to focus on davening. I mean, these are just Rosh Hashanah. These are just headlines. But how to really go into it, it's an avodah of a lifetime. Let's try to do one more piece, and let's page 58, the next page. Brings the Gemara in Brachos. One should not rise to daven but with kavod rosh. Literally means heaviness of the head with humility. That's the Gemara in the fifth parak, the beginning of the Gemara in the fifth parak in Brachos. The Gemara says that when you go to daven, you have to daven. When you daven, you have to have heaviness of the head, which Rashi explains there. The Mefarshim explain is humility, heaviness of the head. This means this is a very basic teaching from the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. This means do not. We'll just start it now. We're gonna have to go back to this next time. This means do not daven for that which you lack, for then your prayer will not be acceptable. This sounds very shocking. We can't stop here. It doesn't chalila mean, of course, you're supposed to daven for what you lack. So what does he mean? So he says, if you wish to pray, do so for the sake of the heaviness in the head, with a capital H. For whatever you lack, that same deficiency is in the Shechin, as it were. For man is a part of God from on high. Any deficiency in a part, therefore, applies to the whole as well, and the whole sense is the deficiency of the part. He's saying a very, very profound thing. Of course you can daven if you have a toothache. You daven, your tooth is hurting you. And you daven because your friend is going through some difficulty. Of course you daven. But the point is, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is saying here is that when you daven, you have to daven for the ultimate sake of what? The heaviness of the head. Which means that the Shechina HaKadosha. If there's something that's missing in your life, it means that kivyochel, there's something missing, not in Hashem, his essence, God forbid, but in how Hashem is revealed in this world. Because whatever is missing inside of you, since inside of each and every Jew, there's what? Every Jew contains within him a chelek elokah mimal mamish, a part of Hashem from on high. Therefore, if there's something that's missing in your life, be it parnasa, be it children, be it a shidduch, be it health, that means that kivyachol, there's something that's lacking in the Shechina's presence in this world. I'm going to talk about this much more next time, just to read the paragraph. And any deficiency in a part, therefore, applies to the whole as well. When there's a part that is, since each and every one of us is a part, kivyachol, a chelek elokah mimal mamish, therefore there's something that's missing in one of us, that means there's something that's missing in the Shechina in this world. The Jewish people are the embodiment of the Shechina, of the divine presence in this world. Therefore, if there's one Jew that has a toothache, that means there's something that's aching in the Shechina. Something is missing in how Hashem's presence is revealed in this world. Therefore, of course you can daven for your simple needs. But the way that you daven for your simple needs is that you're davening that Hashem, if my parnasa, there's something that's missing from my parnasa, and therefore there's something that's missing in Kavod Shamayim. I'm having trouble, on a simple level, if I could pay the yeshivas more, I would like to pay more money to the yeshivas. I would like to be able to help to support more tzedakahs. And so on and so forth. The davening that is purely for one's physical need, that's what the Baal Shem Tov means, it's not acceptable. But when your davening is for your physical needs, but the physical needs as seen as a part of a greater whole, which is what? Which is the Shekhinah in this world. That's what it means when the Gemara says that Hashem davens. What do you mean Hashem davens? The Morzim Brochus. Hashem davens. How can Hashem daven? The Gemara brings the tefillah of Hashem and brings there from Yishmael ben Elisha Kohen Gadol when he came in on Yom Kippur, Lefnei V'Lifnim, and Hashem daven, Hashem said, give me a brocha. So the Rebbe of Yonis Naivish had said that Hashem, the meaning of Hashem's davening is as follows. That Hashem is, he said, there are two ways that you could, ask somebody to do something. He says, there are two ways that you can make a request. And this is what it means that Hashem davens. The simple thing is that someone needs something, a child, something from the parent, so the child davens to the parent. Please, mommy, please, daddy, please, mommy, please, daddy, right? That means the smaller one is calling out to the greater one. That's one type of davening. But there's another type of davening where the greater one is calling out to the smaller one. What does that mean? Sweetheart, I asked you so many, I told you that if you're going to do this, I'm going to have to punish you. I'm begging you. I don't want to punish you. Please be good. Then you have the parent davening to the child, right? I'm begging you to be good because I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And all of us who are parents know that we've been in these situations where you never thought the kid would continue doing that thing, and you made this ridiculous threat, and then you're going through this 100 times to get the kid out of it. And if the kid is stubborn, you can't believe it. And then your wife will say, don't do it anyway, right? Don't do it. Don't carry it out. But you're standing there. The Malacha Mav is ready to strike. But you give the kid 100 chances. You're davening to the kid. Please, please. And you say, but at least you know what? Just say you're sorry. No. Just a motion of the head that you regret it. No. And you're davening to the kid. So the Baruch Shalom davens teaching every one of us. The Hashem says, Yehi Rotzen, may be your will that you do my will. Because I only want to give you bracha and health and good things. So Hashem davens teaching every one of us. Ad kidei kach is the Shekhinah missing. If there's one of us that's missing something. But we'll have to go, back to this piece, Hashem. Not next week. Next week, Baruch Hashem, there's a chasna. There's a chasna from a good chaver over here. So we'll continue with Shem in 2 weeks. It'll be on the phone thing. In general, you could always call up on the phone on the shul's number and find out what's the story of the shiurim that week. It's all on the 374-8596. You'll be able to find out any information. But next week, we're not going to have Mitzvah.